You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Johann Schmiegel, you've got the world's highest IQ.
Yes, 247.
Wow, did you know that thanks to Salesforce with Einstein AI, everyone's smarter? Now everyone's an Einstein, just like you.
But I'm the smartest.
Not anymore. With connected data and trusted AI, everyone can give customers experiences they've only dreamed of. Oh, look, here's a few Einsteins now.
Hey, hi.
Hola, amigo.
Everyone's an Einstein?
It's okay, Johann, let it happen. The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. Insight from the reporters and editors who bring you America's most trusted business magazine. Plus, global business, finance, and tech news as it happens. Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the weekend edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Another busy week in markets with a Fed rate decision, that monthly jobs report, and several hotly contested political races serving Tim as our backdrop.
And a busy program ahead for our listeners. We're going to get existential with the former longtime CEO of Google, Eric Schmidt. He's going to give us his take on the state of Silicon Valley, the metaverse, and talk about his new book, The Age of AI and Our Human Future.
We're also going to speak with Teva President and CEO Kåre Schultz on his company's latest earnings. And also this week, the company, its record sale of $5 billion worth of sustainability-linked bonds.
Plus, the latest wearable tech device needs only a finger to give you personalized health insights. And your 2021 holiday gift guide is here. We'll tell you how to surprise your loved ones this season, regardless of your budget. Though it helps to, you know, want to spend $50,000 on a watch.
I want something from the red, blue, and green categories. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, you're
Tim.
In luck.
All of that to come. We begin with an overview, though, of this week's issue. We welcome in the editor of Bloomberg Businessweek magazine, Joel Weber. Joel, we're going to talk about the cover in just a moment, but there's a great deep dive into Papa John's.
This one's memorable. Obviously, Papa John kind of left in disgrace about 3 years ago as chairman of the company. And boy, those last 3 years, he sort of has been wandering through the wilderness, trying to find his way. And now he's back. And amazingly, he's really obsessed with his old company that he founded all these years ago. And Devin Leonard, who wrote the story, gave us this amazing profile of him from a visit to his home and in Nashville.
Can I just say, I'm obsessed with that visit to the home and the description that Devin did about... what it was like.
Look, he's a memorable character and always has been. And Devin, I think, brought out some of the nuances in some interesting ways, like the fountain that's under construction in his house.
The fire fountain.
The fire fountain, the Camaro collection.
He's got a chopper.
The mating eagle statue, which I asked to see a photo of, and we evidently did not get a photo of it, which seems like a huge oversight, I will admit. So there's all of that, and then there's obviously him trying to reckon with the racist statements he made and sort of the legacy of them, including these ongoing feuds that he continues to have over them.
Well, and I feel like he points his finger, you know, we're talking about John Schnatter, who created Papa John's. I mean, I feel like he points his fingers at politics and progressives and the NFL and
the wokeness,
so many
right society. So and you know, being in the South, and you know, he's trying to find an audience wherever he can. Fox News is one of his preferred places, but you know, he really will kind of share the gospel of Papa John wherever he can and with whomever will listen.
And he still eats a lot of pizza.
So 800 pizzas that he's had from Papa John's in the
last
18
for research.
And he thinks the quality has gone down. He's got a lot to say about that. You know, what I find really interesting about the story, though, is to have somebody who's actually did create a business, really successful, mm-hmm. has thoughts on the brand and where it's gone, and like clearly wants to have a door remain open so that at some point he could try and come back, I think.
And he's suing the company.
Suing, the, you know, the lawsuits are have been interesting. There were some settlements. There's also been this feud he had with the company that was sort of advising him, mm-hmm. Which Devin goes into in the story. The other favorite thing here is that, you know, the stock's gone up and he's cashed out $1 billion. So he's living a good life regardless. And, you know, even 800 pizzas is just like a drop in the bucket.
It's another great tale by Devin. No doubt about it. I'm still trying to figure out, how do you eat 800 pizzas in a year? That's a lot of pizzas every day.
I stopped at like 100 slices. Yeah.
Exactly. All right. So an incredible story, deep dive. This one, too, I had no idea when it comes to all that's going on in Russia. We know that there's been suspicions when it comes to cyber criminals. Joel, tell us about the story.
So this story in our tech section that really caught my attention, I think all of our attention when we started hearing about it. So the story looks at a tower that was, when it was built a couple years ago, was the tallest in Europe. It's now the tallest in Moscow. And it turns out that there are a number of cryptocurrency companies that are based there. Mm. And all this ransomware thing that we've long suspected Russia's involved with, and Biden's called Putin to sort of have some very firm conversations about this, a lot of those tracks lead back to this tower. And what's really interesting about this is, like, because of it being this really large tower, it's long been sort of, you know, it's above it all, right? And it turns out, like, maybe that's the perfect address to, like, do some nefarious deeds. And it seems like that's kind of been what's happening.
Yeah, and just a reminder of kind of the world we're living in. Speaking of the world we're living in, YOLO, you only live once. Those meme stocks, we thought it might be a fad, Joel. Not so much. This week we saw it play out again, big time.
So I will admit, when we started talking about this assignment and the story with Annie Massa, that I said, this meme thing, we're sort of over it. There's now these vintages, right? And, like, when you think back to the beginning of the year and that early craze that sort of happened, that was maybe vintage one. And then you saw, you know, AMC have that surge over the summer, or the Dogecoin moment. And now we've seen the Trump SPAC. And this month now, you know, we've seen, you know, Avis go take that moment. And,
yeah.
And then we saw Bed Bath & Beyond. So I thought it was over, like, maybe in the summer. And it turns out that we still have an appetite for this stuff. I think that also speaks to, and this is part of the story, this Robinhood business model, right? Which has gone from being an equity-centric one to, you know, where's the growth going to be? Probably more in crypto. And we've actually seen some of those same traders that were in the meme stock world kind of transition into the crypto one.
That's Business Week editor Joel Weber joining us with a look at this week's issue.
Coming up next, one of the largest generic drug makers in the world selling billions worth of debt in an effort to make its business more sustainable.
Teva president and CEO Kåre Schultz talks earnings and his company's plan to provide countries in need with critical medications.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week. This is Bloomberg.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic from Bloomberg Radio.
This week, shares of one of the largest generic drug makers in the world, we're talking about Teva Pharmaceutical Industries, rallied on news that the company is selling a record $5 billion in bonds tied to environmental, social, and governance targets. We're talking about ESG.
It's something we recently talked about with Teva president and CEO Kåre Schultz. The sustainability-linked bond offering is tied to efforts to increase access to medicines in low- and middle-income countries.
And as I mentioned, the stock, it's been on a tear. It's now up roughly 20% from its late July lows, and despite recent misses on both the top and bottom lines for the third quarter, earnings is where we started our conversation.
Basically, you could say that the expectations that we saw in the marketplace, and also the expectations we had at the beginning of the year, was that the COVID-19 effects would sort of start to slow down in the second quarter, and then in the third and the fourth quarter, we would basically be back to normal. But what we've seen is that we have seen in Europe a lower volume in the total market in both the first and the second quarter, and then a return towards normality here in the third quarter, but not quite getting there. So we see an improvement in Europe, but it's not quite back to where we thought it would be based on a full normalization. And that's basically because there's still a backlog of people not getting to the doctor, not getting to the specialist, and therefore not going for those prescriptions that we would be expecting they would be going for. It is normalizing. It is getting better. We are optimistic about the fourth quarter that we'll see a further sort of increase in volumes in Europe. So that's really the story on Europe. The story on the U.S. is a little different, but basically the same, that we did not see the specialist opening up in the second quarter the way we were hoping for. So we are very dependent on headache specialists for Ajovy and on psychiatrists for Austedo. And we saw that they were opening up their clinics slower. We are now at the end of the third quarter here. We're getting very close to psychiatrist offices being sort of back to where they would have been at the end of 2019. But that natural growth you see of a couple of percent on patient population and doctor visits, we haven't seen. So we've had a setback in the sense that the growing brands we have, Ajovy for prevention of migraine, Austedo for tardive dyskinesia, and Chorea in Huntington's disease, they are growing nicely, but the growth slowed down in the first and the second quarter. Mm-hmm. So even though they're growing nicely now in the third quarter, the numbers are still below what we hope for at the beginning of the year. So basically, we're optimistic about the growth patterns, but the absolute numbers are probably 100 million below what we were hoping for.
Is it by the end of this year, the first quarter of next year, that you anticipate in terms of the numbers that they're back to pre-pandemic levels? When does it happen?
We anticipate that here in the fourth quarter, the numbers in terms of script volumes and the numbers in terms, the normalized numbers, you could say, will be back to pre-pandemic levels here in the fourth quarter of 21.
Oh, okay. All right. And we know, and that's for both of Europe and North America, or one of them, is that for every region? We know the North American market is your biggest market based on revenues.
Both Europe and North America, and it plays a big role for us. So we're really not talking about us not having the right, you know, market shares. We're gaining market shares with Ajovy in Europe. We're gaining market share with Austedo. So we're performing nicely, but the total volume in the market is just lower than what we were hoping for.
Cor, are you confident that people return to the physical doctor's office, the physical psychiatrist's office, to the same degree that they did before the pandemic? Does it ever fully recover with the rise of telemedicine?
I think the number of consultations will fully recover. Some of them will be telemedicine consultations, and that is in principle fine. I mean, the main thing is that people have an in-depth discussion with their psychiatrist or with their headache specialist, because the problem about launching new drugs is that you need to communicate with the specialist. So our sales reps need to communicate with the specialist, and you need the specialist to communicate with the patients in order to get the conversions to the new and better products.
Earlier this month, you guys had recalled more than 2.5 million vials of drugs that the company, that you guys had said may not be sterile. And there were U.S. inspectors that discovered this at a Teva production plant in California. I think they were medicine used to help treat cancer. They may have contained mold contamination. What's the update on that?
Yeah, so first of all, just to correct a few facts, we actually ourselves discovered some environmental issues related to mold. It was not the case that the products were not sterile. And we did recalls in the first quarter and the second quarter. And that's something we did based on our own internal investigations. And then following that, we had an FDA inspection, which resulted in a 483. And we are now addressing all the points raised in the 483, working together with FDA to secure that we get all the remediation done. And the factory is still in operation from the point of view we're still packaging and shipping products, but in the sterile area, in order to make sure that the environment is in complete and perfect compliance, we have stopped manufacturing for a shorter period where we're doing remediation, and we expect to be back manufacturing here at the end of the quarter. And this is all done in close collaboration with FDA.
How far along are you in working out all of those issues? How long do you think you will be collaborating with the FDA?
So some of these issues take, you know, a shorter period to correct. Other issues take a longer period. So typically when you have a situation like this, before you reach a complete remediation, it can be 1 to 2 years, but that doesn't mean that you can't be manufacturing and supplying your patients in the meantime.
What's the cost to the company because of this, the downtime as well as the fixes?
It's So it's relatively insignificant. It's not a major manufacturing site. It's not a major part of our revenues. So the consequences are basically included in our accounting for the third quarter.
Hey, and also one of the things that we've been watching and I want to get you to weigh in on is Novartis considering selling or spinning off its Sandoz generic drug business. How do you view that? Is that a good thing? Is it something that you're interested in purchasing?
So I view it as something, and of course you have to ask them why they're doing it. I wouldn't know that. But if I just look at it from the outside, it reminds me of what Pfizer did with their Optum unit. They basically had some generic and old products that they spun out and put together with Mylan into Viatris. And I think it looks like Novartis doing the same. And one of the, you could say, arguments you've heard is that, of course, you get better ratios, you get better growth ratios. If you have an old business that you spin off and you keep your innovative specialty business, then your numbers from that point of view will look better, and that might be the motivation. In terms of us thinking about Sandoz, we are not really looking into it. We don't have any appetite for any major acquisition simply due to the fact that we are focusing on reducing our debt.
Right.
So it's not something we would be interested in.
That was Kåre Schultz, president and CEO of generic drug maker Teva.
Still ahead on Bloomberg Business Week, you only live once.
YOLO.
At least that's the mentality taking over financial markets these days, YOLO. Why the urge to speculate is stronger than ever, Tim, in the age of the meme.
We're also going to catch up with former Google chairman and CEO Eric Schmidt. All that and more to come. This is Bloomberg.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Johann Schmiegel, you've got the world's highest IQ.
Yes, 247.
Wow, did you know that thanks to Salesforce with Einstein AI, everyone's smarter? Now everyone's an Einstein, just like you.
But I'm the smartest.
Not anymore. With connected data and trusted AI, everyone can give customers experiences they've only dreamed of. Oh, look, here's a few Einsteins now.
Hey, hi.
Hola, amigo.
Everyone's an Einstein?
It's okay, Johann, let it happen. The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
Broadcasting from the financial capital of the world, Bloomberg 1130 in New York, to Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 991, to Boston, Bloomberg 1061, to San Francisco, Bloomberg 960, to the country, Sirius XM Channel 119, and around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
It was among our most read stories when it hit the Bloomberg this week, featured in the magazine as well, all about the market psychology and why the so-called meme trade has gripped Wall Street and Main Street alike.
Well, you know what they say, Carol? YOLO, you only live once. So why not take a chance? The piece in this week's finance section is entitled, "Just When You Think YOLO Trading Is Done, A New Meme Comes Along." We get more with Bloomberg News investing reporter Annie Massa.
I was thinking, hey, maybe it's time to write a story about how YOLO trading has tapered off. And literally that day, the Trump SPAC happened. And so I had to rethink it, and I was like, you know what? YOLO trading hasn't tapered off at all. What am I talking about? Like, sure, GameStop and AMC have, you know, fallen. AMC is still trading you know, far above where it was at the beginning of the year. But like, we've had these cycles, almost like different vintages of meme stocks, so, and cryptos. So you had the first wave of GameStop and AMC, then it was Dogecoin, then it was Shiba Inu coin, then the Trump's back. Now we have Avis. It's just a never-ending cycle, it seems.
Well, we love how you did this, and we talked with Bloomberg Businessweek editor Joel Weber about your take and how you guys likened it to vintages of wine, right? We're kind of moving through some different vintages.
Yeah, and each different meme episode has its own terroir.
Nicely done, but I'm bum. What's interesting too is it is kind of fascinating this week. You talk about the, you know, Trump in the last couple of weeks and Digital World acquisition, even Bed Bath & Beyond. Like, can we call that a meme stock?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. What qualifies exactly as a meme stock now? We had a whole group of them at the beginning of the year that became popular at the same time, very obviously got hot on message boards, but it seems like an expanding definition in some ways.
Yeah.
And something that we address in this story is it's reflective of how investing has really changed in the past about 6 years. It didn't used to, even when social media and more accessible online investing became widespread, it wasn't quite as easy as it is today to see something on Reddit or Twitter or anywhere else and just quickly click into an app on your phone and buy a share or a fractional share of a company or a new cryptocurrency. So the information cycle and the ease of trading have both changed remarkably in just the past couple of years.
Well, Annie, a big part of the narrative that has emerged around meme stocks, such as the one we've been talking about, have been the role of retail traders and retail investors that they have in these meme stocks. But I wonder about Wall Street's role and to what extent you have hedge funds getting involved and the bigger companies actually tracking these meme stocks and trying to get in.
Well, we definitely saw that the hedge funds had a wake-up call in the GameStop era. And that, in particular, was, the things that happened with Melvin Capital, for example, just show how there needs to be a new awareness around the force with which a wave of retail traders can come into the market. And I think that hedge funds did take note of that. And, now you hear from some traders and from some firms that they have made some tweaks around how they monitor, social media phenomena.
These people that we all thought were going to go back to work and not be able to trade because of the ease of doing it on these platforms can still be back at work, right? And trading, is that how we see this?
Well, I mean, it differs from person to person, I guess, but it's definitely easier to do just quickly on the side on your phone, maybe while you're walking out to get lunch or something, than, you know, opening a whole desktop application like you might have had to do several years ago. So it's just getting more discreet and easier as time goes on.
Have the conversations online changed around meme stocks?
I guess one prominent aspect of the GameStop run-up was trying to execute a short squeeze. So I wouldn't say that that's not the case across the boards. Some of the popularity of certain meme names, especially in crypto, are just, bidding up the price of something that almost in the quite case of Shiba Inu coin or in the case of Dogecoin really had almost no value whatsoever. And it's just riding a wave of popularity, basically.
All right. Too early to say fad at this point? I mean, no, really. Like, it's just fascinating how you set out to do one story and then it was like, Annie, it's not going to be the case.
Talk about a wake-up call, right? Now I'm going to be very cautious to call it a fad. That's all I have to say.
That's Bloomberg News investing reporter Annie Massa.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Coming up, a titan of Silicon Valley stops by to discuss where technology goes from here in the age of artificial intelligence.
And maybe we'll sneak in something about the metaverse. Former Google chairman and CEO Eric Schmidt coming up next. This is Bloomberg.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic from Bloomberg Radio.
So if you read Bloomberg News, follow our programming lineup, and if you don't, you really should. I'm just going to put that out there. Anyway, you're likely aware that the age of artificial intelligence, AI, it is upon us. Our next guest had a hand in bringing us to this point, and he's got plenty to say on where we go from here.
To help us understand the challenges facing humankind as this technology becomes more pervasive, Bloomberg News cross-asset reporter Katie Greifeld and I spoke with Eric Schmidt, the co-founder of Schmidt Futures and former CEO and chairman of Google. He's also the co-author of The Age of AI and Our Human Future, which he co-wrote with Henry Kissinger and Daniel Huttenlocher.
Well, Dr. Kissinger, when he was in college, which was before all of us were born, 75 years ago, wrote his undergraduate thesis on Kant. And Kant had invented this whole theory of whether objects were real or how did we perceive them. And he had been interested in how virtual worlds would emerge, although he couldn't articulate it the way we do it today. And when he visited Google and then subsequently talked to some of the AI folks, in particular a guy named Demis Hassabis, he realized that we're busy building the world that he thought about, but we're building it as technologists and without the basis of any kind of philosophy. So he set out with myself and Dan and a few others to kind of think through, how do we address these technologies? And we concluded, and this is the headline, is that this change in the next 5 to 10 years is the beginning of an epical change in human history, similar to the Age of Reformation, where we went from the Age of Faith, where people basically just believed that whatever God said was correct, versus the notion of having reason. And the world where we're going to have ourselves and then inanimate, non-human intelligences helping us is a very different world than the one we're in today.
And bridge the gap between the world we're in today and the world we're heading into, where AI is a bigger part of it. Because, you know, when I think about AI, I struggle to think about how it will transform my day-to-day life. So if we go down that path, you know, 5, 10, even more years into the future, I mean, how do you see this shaping the world around us?
Well, most people, when they think about AI, they think of a killer robot. And that is precisely what
I wasn't going to say that, but yeah.
Yeah, we're not talking about that. What we're talking about is that you will have assistants. Today, you have an assistant in the form of Google. You have recommendation engines and so forth. Those are all AI-powered, by the way, the translations and so forth. That all works very well. What will happen in the next 5 or 10 years is you're going to have conversational assistants that are human-like, that you can ask questions and can make recommendations and, more importantly, generate new things. In our book, we talk about the achievement of AlphaGo, where computers developed new game strategies for a game that had been played by humans for 2,500 years that had never been discovered by humans. We highlight the discovery of a new antibiotic that could never have been done without using superhuman, supercomputer analysis with human collaboration to look through all the choices to find a new antibiotic that saves lives. And we also talk about these new language models, which are these immense systems where we build them and then we don't know what they know and what they really think. And it's called GPT-3. These are the beginning platforms of a transformation of the world around us. So the answer for you specifically, you're a reporter, you're in the news, you're inundated with information. Everyone is going to be pushing more and more stuff to you. You're going to be inundated. You're going to need a digital assistant that will help you prioritize what you need to do in your work as well as your whole life.
Okay, that sounds better than a killer robot.
Absolutely.
So to that end, you write in the preface, along with your co-author, is that the three of you differ to the extent in which you're optimistic about AI. Where do you fall in that?
Of the three of us, I'm the most optimistic, I think, because in my world, in my experience, we have these enormous opportunities with enormous downsides, and somehow we muddle through. If I told you that social media would become the primary attention source and information source for the most of the world, you'd say, great. What I didn't realize when we did social media, it would also be used to manipulate elections and manipulate people through falsehoods and misinformation and so forth. We're working on the latter. So when this next generation of much smarter systems come along, we better have a notion of what their ethics are. What are they promoting? When you put one of these things with your kid, who's obviously developmentally vulnerable, what happens if the thing has a hidden bug in it, like it's slightly racist or it has the wrong values every once in a while it says something inappropriate. Do you really want your child exposed to that in such an important role where this is the child's best friend?
Eric, I want to talk about the metaverse in the context of last week's rebranding of Facebook. Now Facebook is known as Meta Platforms, Inc. Mark Zuckerberg said last week it's now a metaverse first company. Indeed, if you open up Instagram now, it says instead of saying Instagram by Facebook, it says Instagram by Meta. What is the relationship between AI and the metaverse?
Well, the metaverse needs to be defined. As you know, the term was coined in 1992 by Neal Stephenson in a famous science fiction book. And most of us think that the metaverse is a world where, sort of similar to the movie Ready Player One, mm-hmm. where you would move into a digital world that's everyone's smarter, more beautiful, faster, it's more fun, and it's really enjoyable. Facebook has not built that product yet. And so we have to assume that that's their direction. But it seems to me that naming, that changing the name of all of Facebook, which is 100,000 people and an enormous business, based on products that have not been announced yet, is a pretty big decision. And we'll see. Let's see how the products play out.
Yeah, I can't wait to see how that plays out at Facebook. Now Meta, and I love the movie Ready Player One. I don't know if I would want to live there, though. But it's interesting following this announcement from Meta Facebook. I mean, you've seen Microsoft detail their plans for the metaverse or their ambitions there. NVIDIA soared today after Wells Fargo said that there's an opportunity for that company in the metaverse. Is this a new buzzword? I mean, are we going to see every company try to jump on this bandwagon?
Well, I think I would rather have them go back to hype AI, because AI, I understand what that is, and it's going to transform their businesses in an enormous way. What I think of as a metaverse is something very interesting and very powerful. It's a natural next step. I've been involved in various projects associated with it for more than 30 years. Perhaps its time has come. I was in a meeting where one person said that that what will happen is Facebook will use its significant cash and engineering resources to build this world using its identity services and so forth and so on, but that there will be a competitor set of metaverses that will be based on a technology known as Web3, which is a crypto platform, which has different economics, different power structures, different leaders. I think we don't know who the leaders are going to be. What's exciting about this metaverse idea, once again, the marketing ahead of the reality, is that it's another example of how the industry moves forward. In our book, we spent an awful lot of time talking about this new set of platforms that are being built in AI and their impact on society. The metaverse, if it is successful and if we ultimately understand what it is, may have huge impact on our education systems, the way we live, and so forth. That doesn't mean Facebook will be the leader, but probably somebody will be the leader in that space.
Well, speaking of Facebook, in the wake of Facebook's rebrand to Meta Platforms, a lot of the commentary is focused around the Facebook brand and the idea that it's under scrutiny from Democrats and Republicans over what it did in terms of censoring or not censoring content or promoting hate speech on the platform. Our audience is very familiar with the articles that came out as part of the Facebook papers recently. Eric, I'm curious because you're widely viewed as coming in as the, quote, adult in the room when it came to Google. I'm wondering if Facebook needs an adult to come in right now.
Well, in fairness to Mark and his team, they're now proper adults. Maybe they were, you know, young when they were founding the company, but they've earned the right to drive in the way they are. I think we can debate their decisions. One way to understand the problem in social media is you want to maximize revenue. And by maximizing revenue, the best thing to do is to maximize engagement. By maximizing engagement, the best way to do that is with outrage. So guess what? You get more outrage. Because outrage drives attention, attention drives revenue, and the companies are seeking that. And the AI systems are optimized for that. You shouldn't be surprised we got what we got. When I was CEO of Google, we faced similar choices, and we made a decision, which was a collective decision, that we would take some of the gains to revenue, but some of it to quality. That's a different company's decision. If I were doing Facebook today, I would have a hard decision in front of me, which is I want to improve the quality of my user's experience. And frankly, peddling misinformation and manipulating people is not a high quality outcome. Yeah. They've got to figure out a way to address that.
Eric Schmidt,
if they don't, they will eventually face some form of regulation.
Eric Schmidt, thank you so much for joining us on Bloomberg Business Week. His new book, The Age of AI and Our Human Future, co-written with Henry Kissinger and Daniel Huttenlocher. Eric Schmidt, the co-founder of Schmidt Futures and former Google CEO and chairman.
That wraps up the first hour of the weekend edition of Bloomberg Business Week from Bloomberg Radio. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Tim Stenovek. Ahead in our next hour, we're going to hear from the CEO of Aura Health on the company's new wearable sleep tracker and wellness device, the latest version of the Aura Ring. It wraps right around your finger.
It does indeed. Also, the individual who helped build Zappos into a billion-dollar Amazon target, Jen Lim. I'm working with Zappos co-founder Tony Hsieh. She's got a new book out, Beyond Happiness, How Authentic Leaders Prioritize Purpose and People for Growth and Impact.
And speaking of happiness, it's time to go shopping.
Yeah.
Whether you're doing your holiday gift buying online or in stores, our Bloomberg Pursuits team gives you a roadmap to get it all done in time and in style.
Do you want something from the red, blue, purple, or gold category,
all
Tim?
Of the above.
This is a color-coordinating gift-giving guide. We're going to get to it in just a moment. This is Bloomberg.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Meet Gary. Gary's about to become an Einstein in an instant.
Whoa, Einstein hair. I like it.
That's right, Gary, because you're using Salesforce powered by Einstein AI to connect data, predict business trends, generate personalized content, and wow customers.
I do feel a lot smarter.
Because you're not just Gary anymore. You're Gary, empowered by Einstein AI.
Did you hear that, team? I'm an Einstein.
Oh, can I get a selfie?
The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. Insight from the reporters and editors who bring you America's most trusted business magazine. Plus, global business, finance, and tech news as it happens. Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovek on Bloomberg Radio.
Hi, I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Tim Stenovek.
Plenty ahead in our second hour of the weekend edition of Bloomberg Business Week, including Aura Health's mission to get you a good night's sleep. We're going to check in with the company's CEO, Harpreet Rai.
Plus, she worked alongside the late Tony Hsieh during Zappos' journey from startup to billion-dollar Amazon acquisition. Consulting executive Jen Lim stops by to talk about the importance of cultivating happiness in business. And of course, our Bloomberg Pursuits team is out with its 2021 holiday gift guide. Gifts in there for every budget.
Well, talk about happiness. Just give me one of those baubles that's in that
it's
guide.
It's in the mail, Carol.
Yeah.
Ordered. It's on a ship off the coast of, L.A.
Stenovek, not going to hold my breath. Okay. First up this hour, let's get to the cover story. It's about 23andMe, the consumer genetics and research company that wants to become a big-time pharma company with drugs tailored to different genetic profiles.
CEO Ann Wojcicki took the company public back in June. Kristen Brown wrote the piece on the company, which has sold millions of people on mail-in spit tests as a way to learn about their DNA makeup.
Bloomberg News U.S. healthcare team leader Tim Annette joining us now. I have not done one. Have you done one of these tests?
I have not done one, no.
Hey, that makes three of us.
I was gonna say, I've had siblings who do it. I'm like, when you do that, then my genetic material is out there. First of all, 23andMe, most people know it's just about finding out about your ancestry, correct?
Yeah, that's right. I think most people look at it as sort of a way to find out, you know, like, oh, are my ancestors from Ireland or, you know, wherever. And so most of the people that have taken those tests are looking for that kind of information, right? And they do some health testing, and they have over the years sort of, you know, evolved on that. But I think by and large, to most people, this is a company where you go to find out a little bit about yourself, maybe to talk about around the dinner table.
Right? Dun, dun, dun.
Right. Now. It was a startup. Now it's a publicly traded company. What are those ambitions moving forward? What does Anne Wojcicki want to do for 23andMe users?
So what she wants to do is become a drug company. They have amassed a huge amount of data, right, on everybody's genetic makeup. And that data is incredibly valuable to companies and scientists and other people who develop drugs. Because one of the things that you need to develop drugs is a huge database of, you know, all kinds of really nitty-gritty information on people's physical makeup, right?
Okay. This is what everybody warned everyone about when it came to these companies.
It's like, hello.
We started this out by saying, have we done these before? Right. None of us have.
No.
When I talk about this with people, they're like, but what do they do with your data?
That's been a big concern for people, right? Is the sort of the unanswered question of, once you do spit into that tube, what becomes of that? And that's resting somewhere. So what 23andMe wants to do is take all that information and create therapies, right? They want to be able to do clinical trials faster. Mm-hmm. They want to identify druggable targets faster. And they say that having all of this information under their roof allows them to speed up the process. So drugs that, you know, could treat conditions that we don't have treatments for, or maybe finding new ways to use old drugs, right? We could look at DNA samples and find some new way to apply a drug that's been on the market for years. These are all things that they say that they could do with this information that they've amassed from people spitting in their tubes.
Well, this is the fascinating part of it. And I think even people who are truly altruistic, and maybe not running a publicly held company, Tim, like, that's the whole idea of thinking about the use, it's the whole thing of mapping the human genome, right? We were all so excited. What kind of doors does that open in terms of really reworking the medical field and how we treat so many different ailments? That's been kind of the holy grail that we're all going after. Maybe she's onto something.
Yeah. No, I think that it's quite possible that she is, right? The early evidence would suggest that they're having some success. They've sort of ramped up over the last year, even during the pandemic when they've had people spread out working like everybody. You know, they've sort of doubled the number of drugs that they feel that they can, you know, do something with. So that early return suggests, all right, well, maybe there is something to this, right? And so they have partners like GlaxoSmithKline that are very excited, right, about working with them.
A big pharma company.
A big pharma company, right? And so, and, you know, down the road, is this a company that 23andMe competes with? You know, who knows, right? But, mm-hmm, but the, again, there's a lot of early excitement around this idea because there is so much information to look at.
Okay, but big pharma is hard. Companies are made or broken by the success or failure of experimental medications that ultimately get approved or do not get approved.
That's right. And
the
it's
valley
really
of
hard.
Death.
Yeah.
The valley of death, right. So the most things that go into the clinic, like, the odds are a little better than 1 in 10 that they're going to come out the other end as an approved product. So it's a big risk, right? And that's why a lot of investors love biotech, right? There's this huge binary risk, and there's maybe some huge upside, but then there's all this potential downside as well. And more often than not, it's the downside that is the thing that washes out. So there is a lot of risk here and a lot of unknowns as well.
Just quickly, regulators, they're cool with all this?
I mean,
not so much always.
So, you know, drugs go through an approval process, right? And so we'll see how that comes out at the end. But
they've been keeping an eye on this company, right?
Yes,
in terms
they
of
have.
Their collection.
With the testing, with the data collection, and all, you know, other things besides. So.
It's our new world order, Tim.
Are you going to do a test, Carol?
No.
Okay.
Mad at my family who's done it. I'm like, come on.
Because... Yeah, I have a sibling who did it. So I pretty much counted as, you know, her results are similar to mine. Well, our thanks to Bloomberg News U.S. healthcare team leader Tim Annette for joining us to talk about this week's cover story by Kristen Brown. It's all about 23andMe.
1 in 5 Americans have turned over their genetic material to 23andMe or one of its competitors.
0 of 3 in this room.
But the rest of America seems to be willing to give it. All right, you're listening to Bloomberg Business Week. The wearables market continues to grow, tapping into all of our different body parts and working toward being an early indicator of what ails us. We're going to get an update on that and the Oura Ring from the Oura Health CEO.
We're going to speak with Harpreet Rai. This is Bloomberg.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic from Bloomberg Radio.
By one estimate, the fast-growing wearables market could grow to more than $76 billion by the end of 2028. More companies, including Meta Platforms, looking to move deeper into it.
An existing player in the space is wearable health platform Oura Health. The company just launched its third generation Oura Ring. That was in late October. It connects to your Apple or Android phone and provides daily health insights to its users.
Sleep quality, heart rate levels, period prediction, just a few of the many data points the Ring can produce. So we asked Oura Health CEO Harpreet Rai how customers should keep track of it all.
Look, so we make a wearable ring called the Oura Ring. You know, it looks like, a normal ring, and it connects to your phone, and we have, you know, both iOS and Android. And, you know, we give users daily insights about their health, mainly focusing on their sleep, activity, and something we call readiness.
Well, I'm curious about how you get that data and then how you present the data, because if you look at what you can do, daytime heart rate, period prediction, improved temperature sensing, workout heart rate, improved sleep staging, blood oxygen sensing, activity score, sleep score, activity detection, heart rate variability. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. How do you make this into actionable data that improves the life of somebody who's using the product?
You know, Tim, it's a great question, right? It almost seems like it can be data overflow. But we keep it really simple and we personalize it to you. So we have three main scores, your activity score, your sleep score, and something called the readiness score. And the readiness score is something that takes an overall look at both your sleep and activity patterns over the last 2 weeks and prior, you know, frankly, month or so. But then, as you noted, some of these other features, right, like things like if you're getting, you know, ill, we've, you know, done some research on that during the pandemic. You know, we will actually have certain alerts that come through the insight messages and our scores every day. So every day, a user actually sees their own data, sees their scores that are personalized to them based on their baseline, and then it gives you a little bit of a tip or, you know, an insight. And we really feel like that helps contextualize the data, and we're now starting to offer a lot more content. So you actually get, you know, content and ways to learn about your health and actually things that you can do, guided programs that can actually help you improve. So we try to simplify all that data down and giving people a little bit of nuggets every day, which we call our insight engine.
So Harpreet, talk to us about some of the suggestions you give to people, because I'm always curious about the impact. I love wearables, but it is a lot of information. Tell me, though, how it can improve us, especially when it comes to something like sleep, which I have to tell you, whenever I go into a doctor with a problem, they're like, so how are you sleeping? Because your body can't heal unless you're sleeping well. It really is. I think you've described it as kind of the magic pill. And it seems so easy, but it's not always that way.
Yeah. Look, I think all of us, unfortunately, know what a poor night of sleep feels like, right? Like we're more stressed, we're more irritable. No, look, I think unfortunately, as you mentioned, that the actual impact to sleep in your health, right, is becoming more and more prevalent in you know, the news, as it should be. Lack of sleep has actually been, you know, linked to early onset of Alzheimer's, to, you know, unfortunately, you know, higher incident rate of cancers, and even things, you know, even things as you know, more simple as like even just your memory recall and what you can remember that day. Mm-hmm. So I think sleep does have a huge impact on your health. But what we find is by giving users this information every day, right, they're able to see if something's changing and something's off. And then they sort of ask themselves, what did I do yesterday? And so you may actually see that your resting heart rate, you know, on a certain night is actually higher than normal, right? And we'll give you a little message. Hey, it looks like your heart rate was high. You know, higher than normal. What is that? Maybe because you ate too late, or maybe you're stressed, or, you know, were you up late working? And so we actually try to give these, you know, messages to contextualize the data that allow users to ask themselves, hey, what did I do? And frankly, you know, I think the analogy I like to use is, you know, it's sort of like the car, right? So cars nowadays have all types of sensors, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, you may have tire pressure running low in one tire. Now, we're not, you know, the car doesn't say, hey, your tire's flat. Right. Right? It doesn't say why that happened. Is it because you ran over a nail, or, you know, you parked it outside uphill on a cold day, so you're, you know, your front tires. So I think it's like that same analogy that if you look at that data, you know, what's that saying, Peter Drucker? What gets measured gets mastered.
Right.
When you start to see this data all the time, you can start to see if something's off. And I think it's that check engine light or that check tire light.
The first thing that I notice about the Oura Ring that's different than other wearable devices, is that it's on the finger rather than being on the wrist, like the Apple Watch or the Whoop, or, you know, previous examples of technology like Jawbone or a Fitbit, for example. Why the finger?
know, I think from an accuracy point of view and convenience, it just ends up being sort of the sweet spot of wearables. So, you know, every hospital you walk into actually takes your heart rate on the finger and your SpO2 as well. And actually most diabetics, right, measure their glucose by taking a finger prick, right? And it turns out that the pulse on your finger, the pulse signal, is about 100 times stronger than the wrist where your typical wristwatch sits. So we used that phenomenon that, you know, other devices have used in the past and actually made a wearable from that. And I think, you know, what we found is that it's just much more accurate for a lot of these health features, including sleep, things like heart rate variability, which is a sign of stress, or even things like illness and even period prediction and some of the women's health features that we've been developing.
And one thing I'm curious, and I'm thinking of people, Harpreet, who are listening and saying, okay, lots of information, you can give me a heads up. Do you have any anecdotes, stories about the impact that this device has had on people's lives?
Totally. I think, you know, frankly, we've heard everything from people finding out they have a serious medical condition by realizing they have abnormal sleep patterns or that their heart rate was really high compared to others that they knew, to people just realizing like, hey, I started to realize the days that I actually have a glass or two of wine, you know, with dinner, that it actually, you know, ends up reducing my sleep score the next day, and I sort of feel way worse. And I think, you know, we found people just adjusting their daily habits to finding out about things that may be affecting their health that are much more seriously. And you know, frankly, I think it's those stories that we hear from our users that really keep us and our team going.
What's the end game for you guys? Because Tim and I were talking to you before we got started. We thought, man, this could be a great add-on for a lot of well-known companies that are out there that are pursuing wearables, are already in the space. Could be an Apple, could be a Facebook. Like, you could kind of go a lot of different
Amazon.
Thank you, Tim. What's the plan for you guys?
No, look, I think it's a great question. I think from our perspective, you know, we'll do whatever, you know, really allows for the best risk return for our shareholders. And also, frankly, what allows us, that we think, to keep executing on our mission, right? And really to bring the world, you know, health as a daily practice. And so, you know, whether that means an IPO or, you know, whether that means an acquisition, I think, you know, we're not focused on that. We're just focused on really making the best possible products and solutions for our customers.
That's Oura Health CEO Harpreet Rai, an executive in a company I certainly expect to hear more from down the road. I wouldn't be surprised, Carol, if this were an acquisition target.
Still to come on Bloomberg Business Week, she was there as Zappos went from a startup to a $1 billion Amazon acquisition. She continues to track happiness in our world. She's got a new book out, and it talks about how happier employees lead to happier customers, more successful companies, and more meaningful lives.
It's a mission that she and the late co-founder of Zappos, Tony Hsieh, developed together. This is Bloomberg.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Meet Gary. Gary's about to become an Einstein in an instant.
Whoa, Einstein hair. I like it.
That's right, Gary, because you're using Salesforce powered by Einstein AI to connect data, predict business trends, generate personalized content, and wow customers.
I do feel a lot smarter.
Because you're not just Gary anymore. You're Gary, empowered by Einstein AI.
Did you hear that, team? I'm an Einstein.
Oh, can I get a selfie?
The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
Broadcasting from the financial capital of the world, Bloomberg 1130 in New York, to Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 991, to Boston, Bloomberg 1061, to San Francisco, Bloomberg 960, to the country, Sirius XM Channel 119, and around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
She spent nearly a decade as a consultant with Zappos as that company grew from a startup in the e-commerce world into a billion-dollar business that was ultimately bought out by Amazon.
And along with the co-founder and CEO of Zappos, the late Tony Hsieh, founded the consulting firm Delivering Happiness, which helped others realize the impact of prioritizing purpose, people, and profits.
Jen Lim is CEO of the consulting firm Delivering Happiness, and she's got a new book out. It's called Beyond Happiness, How Authentic Leaders Prioritize Purpose and People for Growth and Impact.
Well, I think what was really, I guess, most interesting for me, part of that experience is that around the same time, Tony and I started geeking out on positive psychology and the science of happiness without knowing that there was something like that that existed. Zappos, to me, became sort of this petri dish as to how to prototype and experiment with these concepts that have been universally known since Aristotle and Socrates, and then more recently with positive psychology like Mari Seligman, was what would it look like to do it in a company setting? That's what really broke Zappos into a new barrier of practicing these things that are so universal. Everyone wants it. Everyone wants to be happy. But how can you do that, especially in a workplace setting?
So, Jen, we talked a little bit about the pandemic impact. Tell us, though, a little bit more about the four greenhouse conditions that companies really need to thrive and survive, because I really do think companies coming off the pandemic are rethinking their relationship with employees, rethinking their responsibilities, because the idea of people, purpose, and profit has been around for a while, but maybe we're thinking about it in a different way going forward.
Yeah, I think there's been a huge, here we go again, like great reset of what has happened in the last, and we're still going through it, you know, and this is like 18 plus months, almost 2 years. And what I've learned, even like from Zappos days to the last 11 years of Delivering Happiness, that formula really worked well in terms of if we can make our employees happier, we can actually have happier customers and more profitable businesses. But what I've learned, especially in the last few years, is that those greenhouse elements is making it even more impactful and universal, that because with all the changes that we cannot control around us, what we can do as leaders and companies, therefore, is what we can control what's within us. And these greenhouse elements that I talk about have been time and time again, from Starbucks to companies in Egypt to Kazakhstan. Like, it's been incredible to see how they adopted these things. So the elements are alignment, belonging, accountability, and commitment.
It's interesting, though, you know, Jen, we're at this time where companies are maybe rightfully so being asked to do a lot. And I use that as private companies, publicly held companies, which we cover so much here, obviously, at Bloomberg. But, you know, when it comes to ESG, right, environmental social governance, their responsibilities, when it comes to diversity and inclusion, and being asked to really step up. And I do wonder about what is the responsibility. You talk about, you know, managing, you know, purpose, profit, people. Can companies kind of be all things, especially if you're publicly held companies, you know, where you are judged quarterly, unfortunately, by still financial metrics, for better or worse?
So I would say the short answer is yes. And the reason why, like the freshest example that I have is the work that we did at Starbucks. And, you know, here's a company that's super public, ubiquitous brand, has a lot to do with like how they have to answer to the quarterly earnings. And before the pandemic hit, like they were on a high. I mean, they were like one of the highest stock prices of all time, even after Howard left. Mm-hmm. So when the pandemic hit, it was a triage situation, you know, like with the fact that the revenues were plummeting. And what I saw was very revelatory as to where we can be and learn from this kind of stuff, because they had all this pressure, but what I saw in this leadership team is that they actually held a mirror to themselves and they asked themselves, are we really living up to this mission statement, which is nurturing and inspiring the human spirit, one cup, one person, one neighborhood at a time? And I saw something pretty miraculous, because even though they were hurting as a company and their profits, they realized that they did have to double down on what their mission statement and therefore purpose was. And what came out of that, in addition to the triage that had to happen, was this whole new program on what to make the company more people positive and planet positive in a way that took a real honest level check on, look, we've been profit driven. How are we going to use this profit in a more meaningful way? So it can be done, but it does take a lot of deep diving and self-reflection of what matters most.
That's Jen Lim, the CEO of the consulting firm Delivering Happiness.
Check out our new book. It's called Beyond Happiness. You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Coming up, our Bloomberg Pursuits team, it's out with its holiday gift-giving guide for 2021, Tim.
And a bit earlier than usual, and for good reason. We're going to tell you why right after this. This is Bloomberg.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic from Bloomberg Radio.
Every new watch is like a new piece of art. It has a different story to tell.
Italian wines as a whole really speak to that quintessential need.
It is the most powerful car made in the U.S., period.
You get the beautiful interior, the iconic design.
It's very chic and posh.
Even if you pay for it, it's something that money can't get.
It is time for Bloomberg Pursuits, and if supply chain bottlenecks have taught consumers one thing ahead of the holiday shopping season this year, Tim, get your presents early.
Our Bloomberg Pursuits team is out with its holiday gift guide for 2021, a wide range of prices here, and perhaps some extra lead time needed for some of these purchases. Hello, supply chain.
Exactly. Can I just say, too, there's some beautiful imagery in the section. You got to check it out, too, on the terminal, online at Bloomberg.com, BusinessWeek.com, or pick up a copy of Business Week. It is on newsstands near you. Kristen Shirley, a contributor to the magazine, put together a list that will totally blow you away.
Well, Carol explained the year's gift guide. It goes monochrome. It's color coordinated. It features nearly 50 gifts grouped and photographed by color. They range from $14 bubble bath and a $40 candle to a $5,000 bottle of whiskey. And
bing,
if you're
bing,
feeling
bing, bing,
really
bing.
Generous, there's a watch in there from Bulgari. It's going to cost you close to $160,000.
You heard him chuckling. Let's bring in Bloomberg Pursuits editor Chris Rouser here to go through the list. It is a really fun list. First of all, you guys do this every year, right?
Yes, every single year in Business Week, we do a gift guide. And in the past, we've done, you know, okay, this year, let's think about experiences, not things. We've done, you know, sort of more charitable-minded gift guides. And then this year, the vibe that we were getting from everybody was...
Give me my stuff.
Let's go crazy. I want stuff.
Pent-up demand.
And people have, you know, like, people want to spend some money on nice gifts. So we organized it by color, because we basically all the most fabulous things, we were like, okay, how do we divide them up? And so we've got red and gold and green and blue. And some really fabulous stuff from our favorite brands.
I have a question. It's 47, though? Is it 47 items?
Yeah.
And what happened? You couldn't come up with three more to make it a nice round 50?
Wow, burned.
Do you know, to be totally honest, a couple things didn't show up for the photo shoot.
This is making pursuit.
The sausage is made. Exactly.
But if you go online, there's more. There's more than 100 gifts when the gift guide goes online. So you should definitely check it out. And there's also a bigger price range online.
All right, come on, Tim. What do you got?
Okay, I'm gonna start with the watch. Start with the top, right? There's a watch in here by Bulgari, $160,000, $158,000. I was rounding up. Why does this make a great gift?
Yeah, so I have tried on this watch,
ooh,
and technically, I think they would say it's a watch for ladies because it's covered in pink sapphires. But I
come on,
dispute
people.
That. You guys are welcome to get this for me for Christmas. So the Diva's Dream watch series from Bulgari is this line of watches that they do that has a pattern on the dial. That looks like these, almost like an array of fans. And it's actually modeled after the tiles in the Caracalla baths in Rome. And so it's this pattern that Bulgari uses all through their jewelry. And in this particular Diva's Dream watch series, they love to like make the dial pattern out of jewels. So
it
it's
is
very
stunning.
Blingy. And it's these beautiful diamonds and these perfect pink sapphires. And it's just like so glittery on your wrist.
How long did you wear it?
Oh, only a few moments. And I had to wear a glove.
You did.
And yeah. You are a watch connoisseur. I mean, you really know what you watch it. So when you really are like kind of blown away by one, you know it's spectacular. I have to say, in that category, I guess it's like the pinkish
yes.
category.
Mm-hmm.
There was also some great earrings that price on request.
Oh, yeah. The Copacabana earrings are price upon request, and they have 90 carats of sapphires, but they're actually pink. Beautiful. So they kind of go from like a white color to, or, you know, transparent all the way to a deep, deep purple. And they're from Chopard. And they, again, if you have to ask, you probably can't afford it.
What is price upon request? Like, can you give us any numbers, number of digits?
Oh, so that, you know, I don't know the price of that, but I think, you know, I would guess it's anything from 600, 700,000 upwards to a million. But a secret about jewelry like that is partially you can negotiate on the price.
Oh,
okay.
So if you are a client you go in, they might throw out a price and then you don't actually pay that price, or you kind of, you know, start to negotiate.
So my Amazon gift card of $1,000?
So if you have $1 million to spend on jewelry, I'm just saying, get a couple of pairs. Get both earrings.
What you're saying is you still have to be accredited investor.
Yes.
To afford it. First of all, I do love, though, how you did it. I have to say, I'm such an idiot, but I first printed out the pursuit section. We had blue paper in the printer. And so I'm coming out and I'm like, this is kind of odd. I thought it was supposed to be different colors. Anyway, I reprinted it. Sorry, trees out there, on white paper. It's really stunning because it is broken into different colors, red, green, purple, gold. Like, it's really cool how you did it.
Well, and you know, it's a real mix of things in each of the colors. So, like, mm-hmm. on that pink page, you've got the Diva's Dream, you've got the Diva's Dream watch, you've got those earrings, and then you have this beautiful fragrance from Louis Vuitton, which has this great sort of mashed up metal cap, which was designed by Frank Gehry. And I'm a big collector of fragrances, actually, and I think now that we're reemerging from the pandemic and you're actually going to the office and you're going to social events, like, let's double down on fragrance. Let's smell nice.
And is this because we've been smelling our own breath for 18 months?
Yeah, exactly. Don't you want to smell something
else? We're not showering.
And, you know, there's nothing more lovely than looking at like a little collection of beautiful fragrance bottles. And this one called Dancing Blossom from Louis Vuitton is really beautiful. And then also on this pink page, you've got this candle, this scented candle from Dante, which is actually a cocktail bar in New York. It's one of the best cocktail bars in the world. And it's a cosmopolitan candle. Literally smells like the cocktail from Sex and the City.
I was drawn to the Theragun.
Because
mm-hmm. I think about the Theragun, and this was like a pandemic purchase for so many people mm-hmm. at the beginning of the pandemic. I recently visited my brother, and he was having back pain, so he went and bought a Theragun.
Oh.
I love these things.
Yeah.
I didn't know it came in this mini version.
They're legit, yeah, and this is the first mini version that I have seen up close in person, but they've had them for a little while, and you know, this version is red, the color is red, but it's also Project Red, so portions of the proceeds go to fight pandemics, yes. which is great. And it's $199, so it's on the lower end of this list.
Not $199. $99,000, like some of the other right. stuff in
there. Let's talk about crepes cake.
Oh, yes.
The purple page, or should I call it lavender page or violet page? I don't know what to call it.
So Kristen Shirley, who's our amazing contributor, who also knows everything about luxury, she suggested this beautiful layer cake, but it's like a bunch of layers, probably like a couple dozen layers, and it's purple. And it's purple because it's made out of purple yams. Like sweet potatoes.
Yeah.
And she suggested, and I was like, uh-huh, no. Next.
Bring me back my watch.
And then she and our food editor, Kate Crater, tried it. And they said, honestly, this is phenomenal. And it looks, it's dessert. It's not like a healthy side. Yeah. It's got sugar all over it. But it's actually really sweet and a really surprising treat for a dinner party.
All right. If Kate says it's good, I'm going to go with it.
What about 30-year-old single malt scotch?
Yeah, so the Dalmore is this brand that has, there's a real, you know, they make all sorts of really sought after expensive scotches. And this one is their 30-year-old, which was released in 2021. And it was finished in 30-year-old tawny port pipes. And so it's just been aging, and it's $5,500. And it's really, if you really want to wow somebody who's like a scotch or whiskey person, this is an incredibly generous gift.
I always wonder, Chris, when you're doing this, first of all, I want to be with like part of your team, because I just think it
you
must
say
be
that every week.
I do, because I really
you know, it doesn't
mean
make
it.
Me feel good. Really, if you're going to that you. Team, are you going to take me with you?
Maybe. We'll see. Yes, I'll take you
okay,
with
but
me.
Everyone wants to be on Chris's team.
We all do, because it's just, but like, what do you guys just start kicking around things, or like, how do you start, because I can only imagine that there's probably tons of things that you could consider. How do you, like you said, it's, people want nice things right now, but how do you whittle it down?
Yeah, so everyone on our team specializes in a certain area. So Kate okay. Crater specializes in food, Hannah Elliott in cars, Nikki Eckstein in travel, you know, the rest of our team. And so we've been collecting things over the past year that we think would be great. And we gathered together all the lists. Kristen Shirley, who worked on this, also like she's a real jewelry expert, and she also fragrances. And so we get together a big list, and then we go through it, and we think, okay, what is a good blend? What would surprise people? Because you don't want to put stuff on a gift list that's everybody would guess already. And and also sometimes things like clothes are sort of actually hard to give to somebody if you don't know their size. So we try to stick to, like, say, shoes or jewelry, which sort of you know what you're sort of getting for somebody.
Can I just say there is a great pair of shoes, a pair of Manolo Blahniks.
Agree.
They are stunning.
Yeah, the Lutara mules from Manolo Blahnik are these. They're blue silk, and the strap across your foot is this really blingy crystal, and it just looks so fun. It looks like a party on your foot.
Can I say, during the pandemic, there was a point, because I'm home and I'm wearing my yoga pants and jeans, and I'm like walking around bare feet. Like, I was like, I don't need to do that. But there was a point on my birthday, I went and bought a crazy pair of high heels because I just wanted, like, some normalcy and something fun.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, I feel like, what this plays into.
I was excited to start wearing shoes again. I mean, they hurt when I started wearing them to the office, but I was excited.
Do you have a favorite here?
A favorite? Oh, that's a good question.
I mean, you obviously like the watch.
I like the watches. You know what? I think the thing that is, like, the most shockingly useful is there is a device from the company called Coravin, which when you open a bottle of champagne, you can just stick it in the top. That's not the sound it really makes.
or maybe it does.
And it keeps champagne fresh for 4 weeks.
That's amazing.
You want to know a funny, very true story?
Yes.
Years ago, before I worked here, I saw a Coravin article about Coravin in Bloomberg Business Week. My siblings and I ended up buying it for my dad for Christmas that year.
Now it works for champagne, which is, like, famously impossible to keep fresh. There's all sorts of little tricks, but this really works, and it's amazing.
All right. Our thanks to Bloomberg Pursuits editor Chris Rouser for giving us just some great ideas for the holiday shopping season.
That's going to wrap up our weekend edition of Bloomberg Business Week from Bloomberg Radio. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tim Stenovek.
And I'm Carol Masser. Be sure to tune into Bloomberg Business Week daily Monday through Friday starting at 2 p.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Radio.
You can also watch our daily broadcast on YouTube. Just search Bloomberg Global News.
And check out our Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Find that at Bloomberg.com, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bloomberg Business Week is available on newsstands at Bloomberg.com and on the Bloomberg Terminal. Also, you can watch me on Bloomberg Quick Take, available at Bloomberg.com/QT and streaming platforms like Roku, Apple TV, Samsung TV, and more.
The Pursuits Edition gift guide, it's there for you and your shopping, Tim.
The gifts are there for me.
The gifts are there for you. Have a great weekend, everyone. This is Bloomberg.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Meet Gary. Gary's about to become an Einstein in an instant.
Whoa, Einstein hair. I like it.
That's right, Gary, because you're using Salesforce powered by Einstein AI to connect data, predict business trends, generate personalized content, and wow customers.
I do feel a lot smarter.
Because you're not just Gary anymore. You're Gary, empowered by Einstein AI.
Did you hear that, team? I'm an Einstein.
Oh, can I get a selfie?
The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.